Hey, you got the morning show with Aaron. That's Meraki there with Simple Pleasures. In the studio, I've got DJ Benny L. Welcome to the studio, Ben.
Hey, good morning. Thanks, Aaron.
So, as I was saying earlier to listeners, if you were listening, Ben is one of our DJs, but he does his show normally from New York City, where you're based.
That's true.
But you're here in Raglan right now. I'm not talking to you on Zoom. You're right here.
Yes, that's true. I am here sitting next to you. It's wonderful to be here, actually.
Yeah, and it's been, I know you've been actually, because you used to live here. That's how you hooked up with the station originally. Mm-hmm. You've been keen to get back to Raglan for a little while, but haven't been able to for best part of 3 years, really, isn't it?
Yeah, well, you know, the pandemic, as we all know, came through and sort of changed up everyone's lives and you know, re-centered global travel. But gratefully, you know, and thankfully, it seems like, in a way, we're in a different stage of the, or I say a different chapter, maybe, of the pandemic. And, you know, traveling responsibly feels like it's something that, you know, we all can do and should do. So it's great to be back here in Raglan. Yeah, once we saw that, my partner and I, once we saw that New Zealand had opened up, this must have been March or early April, I forgot when it was, I turned to her because we had talked about coming down.
I think they announced it then and it was like a staged thing.
Well, yeah. Whenever they had said, you know, like whatever, Americans or whoever it would be could come, or it was just open to global travel for everyone, I turned to her and I said, should we book? And we booked early. So we were lucky. We got, you know, we booked almost that first week and we got pretty cheap tickets. And actually, we're going back. We came here with a stop in San Francisco. We're going back on this direct flight to New York that they've opened up. Air New Zealand,
Auckland to New York.
Yeah, direct.
How long is that?
That's like about 16 and a half, 17
Whoa.
Hours. Yeah.
Deep vein thrombosis coming your way.
Well, we're going to try and get up as much as we can and stretch, obviously.
That's incredible, but handy. Because I know that, I think in the US, like if you stopped in LA or something, you still have to go through customs and all that, and then get back.
And I'll tell you the funny thing about this trip. You know, we were sort of like, I think nowadays, sort of, you're always on the edge, like, should we go, should we not go? Different variations of COVID, and we were going to Midtown for some things that we had to get sorted, and we were sort of like, well, I wonder if we're going to be able to go. And we came out of the subway, like Midtown in Manhattan, and walking up the stairs out of the subway, the entire stairs had been plastered by Air New Zealand stickers that were like New York to Auckland.
Right.
And so, you know, we both were sort of like, good luck. Yeah, this trip seems like it's going to happen.
That's a sign.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, undoubtedly you're not the only person to come over from New York with you guys.
And I'm sure many rats had scurried up those stairs too, also thought maybe they could find their way to New Zealand. Thankfully, couldn't.
We got our own.
Yeah.
Is New York pretty famous for its rats?
Well, this pizza rat. I don't know if you saw that went viral a couple years ago. It was a rat who had grabbed a slice of pizza and was trying to bring it back to its home.
I didn't see
in
that,
the train station. Yeah, we have some pretty intense rats.
Yeah, no, it's not like that here with the rats. Yeah, we got them, but we're more worried about what they're doing to the native plants in the native bush.
Yeah, I was listening to something the other morning that you were having a conversation. I forgot who it was.
Yeah, that would have been the Cutting Wood Project with Crystal.
Exactly.
Yeah. So you were, we did talk to you a little bit during the pandemic because you were you're based in New York, and that was where COVID was really intense right at the start, when people didn't really know what was going on, and there were stories coming out of New York of bodies being put into freezer vans or freezer trucks, like that, and I don't know how accurate that was, but what was the feeling around New York at that time?
Yeah, well, that was definitely very accurate. I actually wasn't exactly in New York during those like really hard 2 months. I was in Minnesota working on had some work over there, so I was there for that period of time. But I was following what was going on, and I had a lot of family and friends in New York, and that definitely was the case. I mean, you know, New York City, as we had talked about, was the epicenter for a period of 6 to 8 to 10 weeks, and hospitals were inundated. Lines were, around the block to try and see doctors. And, you know, when I talk about COVID being in different chapters, that was also pre-vaccine. So, you know, and people were getting very, very sick. I mean, I have friends who are emergency room doctors in New York and Boston who are working, you know, 36-hour shifts,
Ooh.
Completely decked out in,
you
know, PPE. But we've gotten through that. I mean, New York City.
I know. Well, that's old. It's old news now, isn't it? But it's just interesting to reflect how it changed.
Yeah, I mean, I think it changed from, you know, I think it changed from recognition of sort of the severity that COVID can bring, you know, at times to people. I think it also changed. Definitely, the vaccines helped to allow people to be protected. Obviously, a lot of people got COVID, so there was a natural immunity also that sort of emerged. And people now are definitely getting COVID. I mean, but actually, before we came to New Zealand, and I think in small towns in New Zealand, you don't sort of maybe don't experience it that much. But I would say I probably knew 25, 30 people that tested positive for COVID just in this last month before we left.
I could probably at the moment go and find you 25 people in Raglan because we lifted all the restrictions a little while ago. It's normal. Every country that's done that, there's been a rise again in COVID. I mean, it's just what you'd expect. It's going down now because we're getting into the hot part of summer.
Right.
So everyone's throwing their doors and windows open and it's a healthy time, really, overall, you know. But we actually had a cold. As far as I know, I haven't had COVID, but I had this nasty cold a couple of months ago.
Yeah.
And people have had both said the cold was worse than COVID, the Omicron version. So,
well, we've had that too.
It's a perspective on life again.
I mean, my partner and I were in South Africa at the beginning of this time last year and came back at the beginning of January. And when we got back the day after we arrived, we had Omicron tested positive. But then a few months later, I got a cold that was worse, you know, much worse, a head cold that was much worse than that. So, you know, it's hard. I mean, I think I think one of the important things is, you know, we have friends in New York City that are still quite sort of, you know, proceed in their lives with trepidation because they have older family members and young kids, you know.
So there's still a hangover, still some stresses for people?
Generally not. I would say generally not. There definitely is. Generally there isn't. But I think, you know, the important thing is to try and not let it's hard sometimes, but I think the important thing is to try and not let the differences in approach, like, impact friendships, you know, or impact family, because that's happened, you know.
And that's happened here too.
Yeah, no, I know it has. And I know it's happened in New York. It really happened all over the place. But, you know, I think at this point, particularly since we're at a different chapter in the pandemic, that, like, you know, generally, if, you know, people are still sick and are getting very sick from COVID. But in general, if you are to get it, it sort of manifests as like a head cold or something like that, you know. So it's not something to be, like, you know, crazy fearful. We do have to take risks, you know, in our lives.
Yeah, I think that the difference between our story and your story is that I think because it was so early for New York and such so much pressure on the systems that the systems really weren't coping, I think it probably was a lot more traumatic for you guys than we certainly had anywhere in New Zealand.
Well, I'll say, you know, unfortunately, it's not going to be the last pandemic that's going to arrive, you know, on planet Earth. So, and, you know, I think being in a remote town in New Zealand, in a remote country, you know, that's physically separated from the rest of the world, which is a beautiful thing for you all often, but probably, you know, the yearning to also get to other places. But I think, you know, New York City will always be a place going forward where you can look and say, how is global health impacting the world? Because we get people from every day from all over the world.
So it's no surprise that New York was one of the early places.
Yeah, and it always will be. And I will say, you know, to swing it back positive, like, we also will always be the I hope, knock on wood, will also always be the city in the world where you can see how humans and societies and communities and creativity can rebound. Because if you were to come to New York today, we did go through that difficult period of time, whatever it was, 2 years ago, a year and a half ago. But, like, you come to New York now, it's back to normal. I mean, look, you know, you go on the subway, I would say maybe nowadays 70% of the people are wearing masks on the subway. I wear a mask on the subway to protect myself, but also to protect, more than anything, other people on the subway. But, like, whatever, you wear a mask for 25 minutes on the subway, you get out of the subway, you take the mask off, and it's like restaurants are back. We eat inside all the time. We eat outside if we can. We go into theater. You know, we go to concerts. We have tickets at the beginning of January when we get back. My partner and I were going with her sister to see a Top Dog Underdog, which is an incredible play that came out 20 years ago in New York that they're doing a renewal of, and by Susan Laurie Parks, who won the Pulitzer Prize. It's this amazing play that's on Broadway. You know, Broadway's struggling because, again, people do have trepidation to go see to see theater, but it's. I mean, there's just incredible, you know, music and theater happening all the time in New York City.
So are you kind of surprised you talk about 70% of people still wearing masks on the subway in New York? I know Raglan doesn't have a subway,
but
there's almost no masks. I mean, I could walk down.
Actually, I'd say New Zealand is probably the place. We've traveled a bunch.
Does it feel strange though to turn up and they're like, no one's wearing masks?
I'll say, yeah, New Zealand, not even just, you know, Raglan, but even when we were in Auckland, like, I would say this, there's less people wearing masks than I've seen anywhere. We've been to Europe. We were actually in India this summer, so probably not a lot of people wore masks there. But, You know, I think it's fine. I think it's fine.
I'm just wondering if it was a surprise, really.
I was surprised that not as many people were wearing masks. Yeah, yeah. I was just surprised.
Because of what you've come from.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a bit surprising. It doesn't really bother me anymore, again, because we're in a different chapter of where we are. If it was a year and a half ago, I probably would be, like, sort of muttering under my breath, these Kiwis are out of their minds.
Muttering,
you know,
under,
like,
your mask.
What are they reading on the internet? You know,
it's just, well, I know Raglan is just super casual. Like,
yeah,
most of the time, half of the people not wearing masks just because they forgot them.
Yeah,
you know, it's kind of what it's like here.
And I mean, I'll say, look, the reality is, the fact is, you know, look, I would say, you know, modern medicine it can be an amazing thing. You know, modern medicine is amazing, I should say. You know, and the fact of the matter is, like, you know, what can happen in hospitals, whether it's surgery or dealing with long-term illness, like, look, medicine can't cure everything, but, like, you find yourself in a difficult situation where you have to see a doctor and you have to try and get healthy. I mean, you know, doctors know what they're talking about, you know. You know, the healthcare system has its issues, but, like, you know, yeah, I mean, look, you know, modern medicine, I really do believe modern medicine is extraordinary, and it's not always going to save everyone's lives, but, you know, doctors don't get into their profession for any other reason that they're just trying to, you know, help people and save lives. And that's just the reality. You talk to any doctor that I know in the States, that's really what they're trying to do. And you find yourself in Africa or Asia, it would be the same. They're trying to help their community. Like anybody, really, you know, thinking positively.
It's just interesting to hear the perspective from New York, because we got immersed in our own perspectives everywhere, like everyone did. You head down trying to get through whatever was happening, and it's just interesting to hear a different perspective drawn from a different experience. And I imagine that one of the things driving the still high usage of masks on the subway in New York was just the traumatic experience that preceded it, which we just didn't have, really. I mean, we did have this kind of local outbreak. We were the first place that Omicron got outside of Auckland.
Yeah.
And so the New Zealand TV news media turned up here shoving microphones
into
everyone's
faces.
Right, you
said the other day, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, saying, do you know you're below the national average for vaccinations, which turned out to be normal for rural towns.
Right.
But it was...
I mean, look, here's the thing. I mean, I don't like wearing a mask, but, you know, like, I guess... I don't know when the laws in the United States arrived, but we you know, in the U.S., we weren't wearing seatbelts until whatever, early 1970s. And,
same here, yeah.
You know, nobody's going to argue that it's, you know, like, it's not, is it fun to wear a seatbelt? Do we like that strap when it gets stuck and you're trying to, you know, move forward? It's a very different thing, but, like, you know, the science says you wear a seatbelt, you get in a car crash, the chances of survival are umpteenth times higher than, you know, if you don't wear a seatbelt. And, you know, nobody's, I'm sure there was a little pushback when seatbelts came in at that time. The fact of the matter is that kind of stuff does help. So for me, like, you know, look, I hope we get to a place where we don't need to wear a mask. But
I feel like we are here. Like, I think it's only some medical people have to wear masks in terms of the rules. And you've seen how casual everyone else is. But mm-hmm. It's probably enough about masks.
Yeah, yeah,
anyway.
Sure.
So, folks, we're talking to Ben, who is our DJ for Cross 110th Street Beats, Ritmos and Stoops show. And what are Ritmos and Stoops? Is this New York slang?
Well, Ritmo, Ritmo is in Spanish. Ritmo is rhythm.
Okay.
Yeah. And a stoop is a set of stairs that you often see in New York City, sort of leading up to like a brownstone or leading up to like a 2-3-story building. You see them in the Bronx, you see them in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
And so when we talk about hanging out on stoops,
yeah,
like, that's a classic New York City summer thing. We hang out on stoops, we listen to music, you know, we hang with our friends, we have a picnic.
Yeah. Right. Okay. So I thought we should, since I'm saying those words, explain what they are.
Yeah.
So because we learned, one of the benefits of COVID is we learned how to do remote DJing at the station. And so we had at one point everyone but me was DJing from home. I think there were 3 people who didn't do it, but out, you know, another 30 odd were.
Mm.
And then I think I must have mentioned to you at one point that we had, you know, we knew how to do it now, so you started doing it from your place.
Yep.
And you've been pretty consistent with it.
Like, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I thought maybe because he's not in Raglan, he might be excited to do it for a little while and then it might fade out. But I think you like the music.
Yeah, it's fun. I like being living so far away from here. It's nice to feel like still having a connection to Raglan, to Aotearoa, to, you know, friends that you know, are close friends here in Raglan and in New Zealand. And, you know, yeah, I try to do the show every, it's Tuesday afternoons, 1:30 to 3 down here in Whangaroa, but then that's Monday evenings. Right now, this time of the year, it's 7:30 to 9 in New York, but it shifts depending on the changes in time. And, and it's, you know, I sometimes get messages from one of the DJs here, Javier, who tunes in periodically and says, you know, music sounds sweet tonight. And, you know, it's fun. I wish my setup was a little bit better. I wish it was more of this professional setup that you have in the studio.
You're fighting with your laptop.
Yeah. Well, it'd be nice to bring in, like, you know, co-hosts or do some. And I probably, if I did put a little bit of energy into figuring out how to do it, I'm sure I could through just the laptop. But it's nice to have this. I mean, this setup is so extraordinary. And the work that Aaron's been doing at Raglan Community Radio over these, I guess, 8+ years since I lived here, maybe longer. How long have you been working
this job? About 10 years now.
10 years. Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. It's amazing what he's been doing. And this is such a blessing to have, you know, this resource. We certainly don't have as many community radio stations as we should have in the United States. And this is like one of the gems that I feel is really special about Raglan. And, you know, makes me feel like I want to gravitate here as much as I can, which is like every 7 years.
Give or take a pandemic or two. Yeah, well, hopefully there's not another one in the next 7 years. Yeah. We could do without that. Yeah, although we've had some good practice. And the other thing you do is, I know you're into making films. You showed a short film at the Raglan Film Festival.
Yeah.
When you were here a few years ago. Was that the same year that I put in that film about extreme waste? Was that
Yeah, that was.
It was the same year.
Yeah.
So, did you get a prize that year?
I did, actually, yeah.
And your film was called The Backwards Cyclist?
Backwards Rider, yeah.
The Backwards Rider. And it was literally, folks, you should see it, because it's so weird to see this guy riding his bike backwards.
Yeah, this guy.
I mean, there's more to it than that, but when it first comes on screen, you're like,
well, I'm hoping. I'm hoping that this that the project that I've been working on with now with a couple colleagues based in Canada, which we're probably about a year off from, you know, releasing, hopefully through the film festival circuit, and hopefully it'll make its way down here. But it would be also a great film at some point in some year, you know, in some time to, you know, when we return to New Zealand, to Raglan, to be able to screen it, you know, in town and have a conversation about the film, because it's this really interesting film that really connects to everyone about sort of bird watching and economics and the relationship between the two things, which seem quite like this divergent.
That's very unexpected too, to say bird watching and economic doesn't.
But it's also like a critique. The film's also a critique about humanity and our species, and sort of asking, like, have we strayed from the path we should be on in a number of different ways.
Are you able to briefly tell us the connection, or do you want to save that for the film?
Well, I think I'll save it for the film, but I will say that I think there's something about birds, which are everywhere, that provoke wonder for us as a species, you know, in a very different way than other animals and other living creatures. And certainly a lot of that has to do with flight and sort of our like wonder at like sort of the magnificence of flight. But I think there's a lot of other things that both are subtle and direct that speak to sort of birds being able to cross borders without like control of fencing or without like politics. I mean,
your border walls are a big topic in the U.S. presumably still.
Yeah, and then they always have been and will for some time. But you know, I just think that there's something, you know, you think about the godwit, you know, which flies from Alaska down to New Zealand, I guess, twice a year, apparently without stopping. And birds, you know, they don't really understand bird migration, scientists. And actually, I don't know if this is available. Part of the film connects with Cornell University, has an amazing ornithology lab in Ithaca, which is about 5 hours north of New York City. They've developed a couple apps. One of them is Merlin, which is the Shazam of birding. So it's amazing. I don't know if it works here in New Zealand. It'd be something to download and check, but it's an amazing app where you can actually, if you hear a bird singing, if you get close to it and you push the button, it'll tell you what bird you're listening to. And that was years, as you can imagine, that was years and years and years of development. But that kind of work speaks to some of the like computational work behind sort of the systems that work within our economic systems, as well. You know, it speaks a little bit to citizen science. And we're trying to make these interesting connections. I won't go into, you know, the film still, we have a lot of writing to do. We have a lot of work to do, but it's a really interesting project. And I feel that, what I was going to say is the Godwits, you know, they don't really know
how
they migrate, but they have recognized that actually birds can put half their brain to sleep. So they can actually they can migrate with half their brain going south to New Zealand, and the other half sleeps, and they can switch in midair. And I don't know if
how they even work that out.
I don't know how they do it.
That's nuts.
Yeah, it is nuts. And they don't know exactly, you know, because they've done these other experiments where they've taken birds that migrate up the eastern seaboard of the United States, flown them to California, released them, flown them in a plane to California, released them, and then within 24 hours, they're back on their migratory track to Northern Canada.
Right, so they can't mess them up either.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I'm sure, I know that there's a lot.
And they've taken them somewhere where they've never been.
Exactly.
Wow.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I know that I follow on Instagram, Department of Conservation here has some amazing bird cams, actually in collaboration with Cornell, because I see on the Cornell bird cam Instagram, they're pulling in video from the Department of Conservation here, and they have relationships with some of the ornithologists that are working.
Well, we have some unique bird species in this country. New Zealand's been so isolated from the rest of the world physically for so long.
Yeah.
There's all these crazy birds that can't fly because they didn't need to. And, you know, there's a David. I remember seeing this footage of David Attenborough on a beach in the middle of the night watching a kiwi, and he was just like, he was so excited.
Enthralled,
enthralled by this bird that he said took the place of a badger in the local ecosystem.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do they still I remember when I lived here in the mornings, you know, the rare morning when I wasn't listening to the morning show on Raglan Radio, I would listen to Radio New Zealand. Do they still start the top of the hour with a bird call?
I don't know, because I'm always on the air.
Yeah. Because I remember
through my childhood, though, certainly I remember it.
Yeah. You know, you'd hear a bird. It would be such a funny shift. You'd hear this gorgeous bird call, and then, you know, they say the sound of the tui, right? Mm-hmm. And then next thing you know, you'd be hearing about some horrible thing that happened.
Current war is. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, no, that was, I guess that was from the days when the national radio was, the focus was educational.
I love that.
Things like that. Yeah.
I mean, I love that. You know, for any of the filmmakers, the Kiwi filmmakers out there, I have yet to, I'm sure it's in some film, but I feel like that would be such an amazing way to start off a film about New Zealand, where someone's in bed listening to Radio New Zealand.
This is the sound of the tui.
Yeah, it's almost like a metaphor for how far removed this country is from the horrors of this. Maybe not all the time, but the horrors of this global world. That's we're getting dark here this morning.
Getting dark. Let's get back to the birds. Or what about I'm just interested in funding for this sort of thing. That's if you're making documentaries in any part of the world, getting money is key. Or you could do it like we did a few years ago and probably just did it all in our spare time. That's not a viable long term solution.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's any creative practice, it's hard to make money at the start of anything, whether it's music or filmmaking or, you know, painting or being a sculptor. You know, you have to really have years of dedication. And I mean, really anything, even if you start a business, you know, you're putting your own money into it with faith and, you know, passion that, you know, some years down the line, it's going to pay off, you know.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't say always the payoff, you know, always needs to be monetary, though of course it does in a way, because you need to, you know, support your family and support yourself. But I think the payoff is a combination of bringing this, you know, this the stories or creativity to life, or and then, you know, hoping that as well, part of that is the balance of being able to support yourself financially. But yeah, we've gotten some funding from the Canada Council, with a couple of my co-collaborators are Canadian. We're trying to get some funding in the United States, but it's really a dog-eat-dog world out there when it comes to getting funding. It's quite difficult, but you know, you just got to stay positive too. I mean, you know, what do they say? You know, Van Gogh didn't sell, he sold one or two paintings for a couple hundred bucks, you know, now, of course, you know, we know who he is. So it's you just got to keep going forward.
Yeah, you probably want the money before you die.
Yeah, well, that would be great. But, you know, maybe not even. I mean, you know, you think about, I mean, I think one of the, you know, again, this goes back to the film about birds. I mean, I think that, you know, one of the things that, you know, New York City, when you, you know, is an amazing place, but it's also this like center of commerce in the United States, is, you know, the financial capital of the United States. And Wall Street is really, in a way, the financial capital of the world. And, you know, so much is rooted in money and making more money and you know, just finance and economics. And like, there's so much more. You travel all over the United States, New Zealand, Asia, Africa, Latin America. I mean, there's so much more to life, which is such a fleeting experience that, you know, we can't allow, we have to try and not allow. Maybe it's easier said than done sometimes when you're sitting in an amazing place like Raglan and you have fruits and vegetables around you. But, you know, you have to try and find some joy in other things too, and people do, but you know, we just need to as well have some perspective, because this is such a fleeting experience that, you know, in a moment's notice, you know, everything can change, like, you know.
And we kind of have learned that the last few years,
and money doesn't come with us, you know, into the next yes.
So you're going to be flying back, straight back to New York. What's the sense of dislocation going from a place like New York to a place like Raglan? Does it? Or I guess you've been here before, so it's not a big surprise, but it must still.
It's such different places. Yeah, it's such different place. I mean, it's really feels like, you know. I mean, it's winter and obviously in the States now, so that'll be a big change. But it's odd to think that you go on this metal tube, you know, in the middle of the sky for 17 hours, and all of a sudden you find yourself in a completely different country in a completely different city. It's also remarkable, but. I don't know. I feel like someone who's lived here for many years, and so many members of the Raglan community come from different areas of the world. So this is really part of their lives, that periodically they want to, have to, but also more than anything want to go see family members all over the world. So it's just part of, like, it's part of how we live these days, you know?
Yeah, and there's a lot of people coming and been coming and going. Either they've had family over, or they've been visiting family in the last sort of 6 months or so. Whenever they first were allowed to do it, we've got family arriving on New Year's Day from Scotland. So they're in for a temperature shock.
Yeah, well, that'll be nice. I mean, I guess maybe for me the oddest thing is always being in the Southern Hemisphere for Christmas. Seems weird because I feel like there should always be a chance of snow.
Yeah, well, there is no chance. Yeah, exactly. None at all. There will be no snow anywhere. Maybe on Auckland Island, way down in the bottom of the thousands. Yeah, but even there, probably not. Yeah, that's a part of technically a part of New Zealand. Yeah. Hey, folks, we'll be talking to Ben, who's one of our DJs, our New York DJ from our New York studios, which is basically your living room. But nice to have you in the country again for a little while.
Thank you for inviting me in.
And nice to chat to you. And hopefully we can keep continuing this unusual collaboration.
Yes, definitely. That's the plan.
Yeah, yeah. Cool, man. All right. Thanks.
All right, thanks.